Liz mentioned that people are educated, people know what to do. Some of the most popular people on the news in Cuba are meteorologists. People listen to their meteorologists in Cuba. And in fact, meteorologists are probably the only ones that are not criticized by Cubans in Florida who criticize regularly Cuba, criticize the Cuban government. I've seen the Cuban dissidents and Cuban critics basically broadcast Cuban meteorologists based in Cuba uncritically. And this is something they never do for anything else. So in this context,
We have
Cuba
20
is.
seconds, Professor.
Yeah, sure. So obviously, the embargo affects this. It affects Cuba's ability to recover from these and is often weaponized right in the moment when Cuba is the most vulnerable. So the two go definitely hand in hand and have for decades.
Well, we want to thank you both for being with us. History Professor Mikhail Wolf of Stanford University speaking to us from Palo Alto. He specializes in Latin America and the Caribbean. And Liz Oliva Fernandez, Cuban journalist with Belly of the Beast. We will link to her reports. You can also go to our website for an interview with them in Spanish. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh for another edition of Democracy Now!
You are tuned to KBOO, Portland.
Support for KBOO comes from its members and from 980 Oregon, a public service helping those who are feeling sad, struggling with alcohol or drug use, or just need someone to talk to. Trained counselors are able to listen and provide support 24/7. Confidential support is available by text or phone call to 988. More information is available at 988oregon.org.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up in the KBOO Evening News, as food aid for hundreds of thousands in Oregon dries up due to the government shutdown, leaders cast blame on the other party. The time for choosing a new health care plan starts this weekend, and many people are in sticker shock. Oregon and Washington senators are speaking out, saying it's time to act. And local voters are about to decide, is it worth it to pay more for parks and public safety? This is the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, October 30th, 2025. I'm Annette Newell, so glad to have you with us tonight. As Election Day approaches in Oregon, voters in several counties will decide whether they're willing to pay more in taxes for public safety and parks. This week, Mayor Keith Wilson knocked on doors in Portland, asking people to support raising the city's parks levy. It would bring in around $84 million in the first year. A recent audit found that 86% of Portland's park assets were in poor or very bad condition, with a big maintenance backlog. In Southwest Washington, voters will vote on whether to fund a regional fire authority. The Camas-Washougal Fire Department merged in 2013. It's the only agency in Clark County running two-person engines. Camas-Washougal Fire Chief Cliff Free says creating a regional authority would allow them to create three-person engines. A voter's pamphlet rebuttal argued that while a three-person crew could modernize staffing, it isn't legally required. In Vancouver, voters will decide whether to fund 13 more police officers. That would cost them 15 cents a year per $1,000 of assessed value, meaning about a $75 increase for owners of a $500,000 home. Washington County is also asking voters to support a public safety levy. For someone with a $350,000 home, that will cost about $230 a year. The county says the levy would bring in around $300 million over 5 years. Oregon and Washington State won't be able to generate enough electricity to meet our needs, and the problem could be worse just when the power is most needed, like during storms or in cold winter months. KBOO's Josh Salem tells us about a new study warning us of looming blackouts.
Oregon and Washington State have both failed to keep up with upgrades to their electrical grids. Rolling blackouts during severe weather as soon as 2026 are a likely consequence. That's according to a preliminary analysis commissioned by 22 regional electric utilities and shared at an industry and regional power producers conference earlier this month. By 2030, the annual gap between power generated and what people need could reach 9 gigawatts, enough to power about 1.4 million Oregon homes, or the average amount consumed by the entire state. The grid is being strained as coal power plants are decommissioned, more data centers come into use, and residents switch to electric appliances and vehicles. In addition, the renewable energy projected to become available will not fill the breach. Because of that gap, the Northwest will need to continue to rely on natural gas for longer than expected. However, the region's current natural gas pipelines are already nearing capacity. Starting next year, this could all lead to planned and controlled shutdowns of power when demand is higher than available supply. Theoretically, those rolling blackouts would happen only on rare and perhaps extreme occasions, like the January 2024 ice storm that left tens of thousands without electricity. The risk is higher when extreme weather conditions happen at the same time as power generation is reduced due to low hydropower output from the Columbia River or with low wind and solar production. But meeting cold winter morning energy demands already presents multiple challenges. Continuing to rely on natural gas until enough renewable energy sources are added to the grid presents a real problem. Building out new natural gas plants could take 4 to 5 years. Supply chain issues could further slow construction. In permitting, those projects takes a long time. Renewable energy sources like wind and solar have only made small contributions to meeting peak winter energy needs because those resources need sunshine or wind to generate energy, and they're not always available. Arne Olsen, senior partner with Energy Plus Environmental Economics, which conducted the study, said those resources are only marginally effective in helping meet the region's needs reliably. For the region to meet demand, it would need to add 4 to 5 times more resources to the electric grid each year between 2026 through 2030 than it has ever done before. It's also possible electric bills could climb. Natural gas is a globally traded commodity, meaning rates are subject to unexpected spikes like the war in Ukraine. Reliance on natural gas is something that both Oregon and Washington appear to want to move away from. Both states have aggressive greenhouse gas reduction goals and aim to have their electric utilities be carbon-free by 2040. Donald Trump's hostility to solar and wind energy has made efforts to bring renewable sources onto the power grid more challenging. In fact, the Trump administration has cut hundreds of millions of dollars in federal funding for renewable energy and climate action-related projects. Oregon Governor Tina Kotek did issue an executive order to fast-track solar and wind permits in hopes that developers could take advantage of expiring tax credits. For Oregon, that could potentially allow development of about 4 gigawatts of planned wind and solar energy by 2030. Phase 2 of the study should be released later this year. It will focus on multiple ways in which states can fill the energy gap and will specifically look at how they can meet their renewable energy targets. For KBOO News, I'm Josh Salem.
Oregon U.S. Senator Jeff Merkley says the federal shutdown is hurting hungry families, including hundreds of thousands in Oregon.
The President of the United States has a new MAHA agenda. Instead of Make America Healthy Again, it's the Make America Hungry agenda. It's weaponizing food, using food as a weapon against America's most vulnerable families. In my state of Oregon, you're talking about 210,000 children. You're talking about 130,000 seniors. All told, over 700,000 people going without food. Congress said this should never happen. So we created a contingency fund. That fund has $5 billion in it. That's the intent of Congress, that this fund exists. People will not go hungry. And now here's the president saying, I am going to attack the health and welfare of America's most vulnerable families as a negotiating tactic. Reminds me of his strategy over immigration, saying we're going to separate children. Well, here it is once again, and it's absolutely unacceptable. So the president has the power to address this, and a group of attorney generals are saying because it's the law, we're going to sue to say the president has to follow the law. Some 26 attorney generals are suing, saying, President, follow the law. We're saying, follow the law. His Republican colleagues, 11 of them in the Senate, are saying it matters that children not go hungry. When children don't have food, they also don't learn. So it's not just an attack on their ability to have basic nutrition for a month. And who in the United States says, I'm going to make sure children go hungry for a month as a political tactic? Who says that except this president in this time? It's unethical, it's immoral, it's illegal, and we're here to say, hell no, that Democrats and Republicans must join together and tell the president this cannot happen here, not in our nation, not against our children, not against our vulnerable families.
And that was Oregon U.S. Senator Jeff Merkley. And another Pacific Northwest leader, Washington U.S. Senator Patty Murray, is training her fire on the health care debate at the heart of the federal government shutdown.
Right now, families are window shopping for their health insurance coverage next year and seeing that their premiums are set to double, triple, and in some cases, quadruple. Why? Because Republicans are refusing to so much as negotiate about saving the ACA tax credits. And on Saturday, a few days from now, things are going to get very real for families because open enrollment will begin. Republicans keep saying later, but there is no later. This is happening right now. Republicans keep saying we'll talk about maybe, possibly doing something after the shutdown ends. They were totally unwilling to say or do a thing this entire year when the government was open. It is painfully clear that Republicans are not listening to folks back at home, because what families nationwide are saying is, please stop my premiums from doubling. And what Republican leaders are saying, not our problem. We never wanted to lower health care costs in the first place. People back home are saying, please help, I'm going to be priced out of my health insurance. And some Republicans here are saying, essentially, if only Democrats never protected those pre-existing conditions and never expanded Medicaid, we'd all be better off. Democrats think it is a problem that people are going to lose their health coverage. And meanwhile, some Republicans seem to think it's a problem that people got covered in the first place. Genuinely, some of my colleagues across the aisle cannot open their mouth without saying, repeal Obamacare. Maybe that's why Republican leaders are more serious about avoiding the health care debate than they have ever been about funding the government. House Republicans have been on vacation for 6 weeks in a row. They are scared to negotiate and scared to stand up to Trump, who's even joking he's Speaker of the House now. As for Trump's shutdown approach, if Republicans passed their partisan CR, President Trump is not even in the country to sign it. Does that sound like a president who is interested in ending this shutdown? Does that sound like a president who actually cares if millions of families lose that health care coverage? It is long past time for Republican leaders to get serious. I could not be more frustrated that they refuse to fix this so we can reopen the government and save our families from Republicans' health care crisis.
That was Washington U.S. Senator Patty Murray. And Oregon senior U.S. Senator Ron Wyden led a press conference about the health care standoff.
There is no more important issue. And the reason that's the case is if you and your loved ones don't have your health, everything else goes by the board. You can't work. You can't have fun with relatives. You're not around for a walk in the park. Something as fundamental as American health care. We have been trying for months now to get the Republicans to negotiate with us, Republicans on the Hill, Republicans in the White House, and they have studiously ignored the needs of more than 20 million Americans who are just right now about to get hit with a health care wrecking ball, huge increases in their costs. And I have a couple in Eugene, Oregon. They're not quite eligible for Medicare. They are facing a 500% increase in their premium compared to what they spent last year. 500% for essentially the same care. And Republicans are just not stepping up. And we have been working to debate different approaches and solutions. Basically, what we've gotten is crickets. Now, Peter is a very valuable member of the Finance Committee. And the reality is the Republicans have basically just been sitting it out, literally sitting it out. It has been 400 days, premiums of increases, and still nothing moves them. I guess sending beef to Argentina or something might be of interest. It hurts our ranchers, but that's not doing what we needed. And the reality is this constitutes dereliction of duty in public service. More than half the country has received zero notice from insurance companies that their premiums are about to spike. So the private sector is sitting this out. You've got senators sitting it out. You've got the private sector sitting it out. And people, we're going to hear it because we'll be home here in the next couple of days. People are concerned that they have no extra room to pay for their necessities. They're not going to be able to make rent. They're not going to pay for groceries. They're going to have problems paying for energy. This is what's going to happen when the healthcare wrecking ball comes. So Protect Our Care has always been a juggernaut for its citizen involvement. We've been so glad to work closely with you. And I'm going to let my colleague, Senator Welch, take up where we are. But thank you for coming. This is it. Senator Welch.
Thank you so much, Senator Wyden. And you said it. This is health care that absolutely matters to every single American. And what is sad for me, aside from not having any engagement by the president and my Republican colleagues, is that what we're trying to do is help folks have some health care security, whether they voted for Trump or they didn't. This is not a red state, blue state deal. This is not a Republican-Democratic deal. This is about families. It's about small businesses. It's about farmers wanting to have some minimal level of confidence that if they get sick, they'll be able to get care. If they get sick, they won't go broke. And we've got a bad healthcare system in this country. A lot of places you can get the best quality care, but we spend the most and get the least. And this will make what is already an expensive system, in a creaking system, much worse. Cutting out all those folks who are on Medicaid, that suggests that the approach we have to cost cutting in healthcare is to cut people off of healthcare. Newsflash, people who don't have healthcare still get sick. And I just want to put in context what this means to some real Vermont families, okay? We have very high healthcare costs in Vermont, and we're going to have 45,000 Vermonters who will lose health care if we don't have these tax credits extended. And keep in mind, these are folks who are paying for their own health care. We have a family, 60-year-old couple, that earn $82,000 a year. Their premiums would increase by $23,000 a year. By the way, that's before you get into the copay and the deductible. A family of four that earns $129,000, that's a really good income in Vermont, by the way. But you've got a couple of kids, big expenses. Their annual premium would increase, hold on to your seat, by $50,000, okay? So you know what the answer is for that family, no insurance. And can you imagine, we had a mom who was saying that she feels totally irresponsible if she doesn't have health care for her kids. But on the other hand, she's financially unable to provide it. Another family of four earning $64,000, ages 45, 45, and two kids, 15 and 10, their premium increases are going to go up $2,500. This is unnecessary. And all we have to do is sit down. And when Senator Wyden and I talk to many of our Republican colleagues and ask them, what about those families in your state? They are candid. That'll kill them. They know it. But they won't talk with Senator Wyden, our leader on finance, unless they get a permission slip from the president. Mr. President, make a call from Asia.
My name is Stephanie Bradford. The expiration of the current ACA tax credits will affect me. I'm a type 1 insulin-dependent diabetic. I was diagnosed in 1976 at the age of 7 while my father was stationed at the Naval Postgraduate School in Monterey, California. He was a career Air Force officer. He flew B-52 bombers in Vietnam. I am a genuine military brat. My mother was a teacher. After diagnosis, I spent 2 weeks in the hospital at Fort Ord. I had 57 blood tests during those 2 weeks. When I was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes, it was considered a chronic disease, which it is, that would probably either kill you or leave you seriously debilitated after 20 years. I have fought hard my whole life to make sure that didn't and won't happen. It's been 49 years since I was diagnosed. I'd say I'm doing pretty good. Type 1 diabetes cannot be managed with lifestyle changes or pills. It requires insulin and continuous monitoring of blood sugars. In our country, accessing these basic life-sustaining, life-saving medications and medical devices requires insurance. I cannot go without health insurance in this country. It's just not an option. In April, through the ACA, I went on a Highmark plan. It had a monthly premium of $637.70, which was with tax credits of $394. I was working at a small branding agency at the time. They didn't offer health insurance, so for me, the premium alone was 16% of my take-home pay. My position was eliminated at the end of August. I'm now working as a freelance writer and a marketing professional. So that plan has been lowered, as called for in the code. It's $508, and that's with tax credits of $524. I have monthly copays, though, and out-of-pocket costs that average $308. So that's $816.14 to get out of bed every morning and stay alive. It's not a metaphor. Literally, to get out of bed and stay alive and move through my day. That doesn't count doctor's visits or labs or dealing with a detached tendon on my finger, which I had to do last year. I'm freelancing, I'm job hunting, and while I do that, I'm tapping into my small hard-earned savings account to cover my monthly expenses. The tax credits are expected to expire and my monthly premiums will go up in January. The prediction is that premiums will probably at least double, which means that my out-of-pocket each month for my premium will be $1,016. When you add the other mandatory out-of-pocket costs for insulin, for blood testing, I'm looking at $1,324 just to stay alive. I'm asking my government to extend these tax credits for me and for millions of other Americans.
My name is Ann Schaup with Protect Our Care. We're in the midst of a GOP healthcare crisis. Donald Trump and congressional Republicans made the largest healthcare cuts in American history. They give massive tax breaks to billionaires and big corporations. And now they're holding the government hostage to rip away tax credits from hardworking families. Costs are skyrocketing, hospitals are shuttering, and our nation's public health infrastructure has been gutted. Starting this Saturday, when open enrollment begins, millions of Americans will log on to sign up for coverage only to find their premiums have skyrocketed, doubling, sometimes tripling. As families weigh their options amid this sticker shock, they're going to wonder how they can possibly make ends meet. Because when Republicans shut down the government to end tax credits for over 20 million Americans who rely on them, they weren't just targeting a policy. They were targeting people. Families, seniors, small business owners, farmers, and people with chronic conditions. You won't hear them talk about Sue, the 60-year-old substitute teacher who doesn't know if she'll be able to afford coverage, not only for herself, but for her son who's making his way through school. You won't hear them talk about Jody, who is rushing to have surgery before the end of the year because she doesn't know if she can afford insurance next year. You won't hear them talk about Lester, who owns a soul food restaurant in Richmond, Virginia, and is able to afford tax credits for his, able to afford insurance for his family through tax credits, but also his employees at the restaurant are able to afford healthcare using the tax credits as well. This is a crisis of the Republicans' own making. It's time for them to stop the chaos, fix this healthcare mess and the shutdown. Thank you to Senator Wyden and Senator Welch for their leadership on this issue.
What we're going to do as Democrats in the United States Senate is every single day, everyone, we are going to be working to help people get a fair shake as quickly as possible. Obviously, Republicans have dug America into a hole. So we look at their ideas on the Senate Finance Committee, Senator Welch and I do. They were interested in fighting fraud. We said, okay, there's not as much fraud as they say there is, but certainly there's some. We wrote a bill that throws the book at the fraudsters. If you're ripping people off and illegally signing them up, and Senator Welch and I want to throw the book at them, guess how many Republican sponsors we have on our bill about something they said they wanted to do. So I wrote a book about this, and I said, I'll write something that says I'll work with anybody, blue, red, in between, who's got a good idea that wants to help people. So what we're all about is every single day until this gets resolved, we're working to try to get relief to people. And by the way, when we get this done, I've got the tools in place for the next step, which is driving down costs. This year in America, we're going to spend $4 trillion. There's 330 million of us. That's a lot of money. So we're going to work to get out of this pickle that we have been presented with by the Republicans who have not wanted to work with us on fraud or anything else. And the second when we do, I'm ready to go with a new set of tools to fight costs, which I think all sides now understand how serious it is.
Senator Wyden also spoke out against the president's tariffs this week.
I rise to support my colleagues, Senator Kaine and Senator Paul, on their joint resolution to terminate Donald Trump's order placing blanket tariffs on products Americans buy from Brazil. I'm going to start with the impact on Americans. Donald Trump's unilateral tariff spree is an unprecedented tax on American families who are already struggling. The tariffs on Brazil are no different. We get lots of coffee from Brazil, and coffee prices are up 21% from a year ago. Ground beef is up 13% from last year. That's according to Fox News. And Brazil is a major supplier. But instead of getting rid of these tariffs, Donald Trump is sending $40 billion to subsidize ranchers in Argentina.
The well-known historian, author, and speaker Tim Snyder paid a visit to Portland this week to launch his latest project, and he insists the Rose City is not a war zone.
This is Tim Snyder. A year ago, I launched my book on freedom in an actual war zone in Kharkiv, Ukraine. We couldn't announce the location or even the event out of concern for safety, justified concern for safety. Had to be an invitation only. We had it underground. Kharkiv is 35 seconds away from Russian artillery. Can also be hit by drones and missiles. And it was beautiful. I'm very glad we did it. Terrific conversation with my Ukrainian philosopher friend, Volody Yarmolenko. It's a year later, October 28th, 2025, I am launching the paperback edition of On Freedom, which is updated to account for things that have happened here in the United States since then. As you can see, I hope, I'm doing it in Portland, Oregon. This, my friends, is not a war zone. It's a completely normal, functioning city. And I just have to say, like, there is a real difference in the real world between what's a war and what's not. And there's a real difference in the real war, in the real world, between telling the truth about what's going on and making up big lies. And the people who are telling you the big lies, like that there's a war on in Portland, they will lie to you about anything. And people who say that there's a war when there isn't, those are the people who are planning to make things worse. Those are the people who are planning to bring about war. So that was my thought here in Portland, remembering launching my book in a war zone, and very happy and being very happy to be here in Portland.
Dueling Republican and Democratic bills would keep SNAP and WIC operating during the government shutdown. Here's the latest news impacting our democracy in today's edition of 2025 Talks.
Allowing our fellow Americans to go hungry is sadly right now a policy decision. I would argue a political decision, not a financial necessity.
New Mexico Democratic Senator Ben Ray Lujan is introducing a bill to fund SNAP and WIC during the shutdown, one of several to maintain those benefits for more than 40 million Americans. Missouri Republican Senator Josh Hawley introduced similar legislation, arguing funding food assistance isn't optional. Democratic leaders say they would vote for Hawley's bill, but Senate Majority Leader John Thune is criticizing it for only funding a small part of the government. Thune is standing by his no-compromise position that Democrats must agree to a clean CR.
SNAP recipients shouldn't go without food. People should be getting paid in this country. And we've tried to do that 13 times. You voted no 13 times. This isn't a political game. These are real people's lives that we're talking about. And you all have just figured out, 29 days in, that, oh, there might be some consequences.
The USDA says it will cost more than $9 billion to fund SNAP through November, which Agriculture Secretary Brooke Rollins says the department doesn't have. President Donald Trump and Republican congressional leaders say tapping into a contingency fund for that would be illegal, but he did just that during a first-term shutdown. Several Democratic-led states are suing to release the contingency funding. With SNAP benefits stalling, food banks nationwide are gearing up. The Houston Food Bank serves 18 counties and will begin a large-scale distribution operation on Monday. CEO Brian Green says interruption of the programs will amplify an already growing crisis in Texas. He says their food bank primarily serves people who earn too much to get many kinds of benefits but aren't making enough to get by.
That's the population people don't generally think of. It's amazing how many people think we primarily serve people who are homeless, when in fact that's a very tiny proportion. Two-thirds of the food insecure households have a job. They're working, everything is fine on the outside, but they're struggling.
Along with bills to fund SNAP and WIC, the Senate's considering the Federal Employee Civil Relief Act. It would protect federal staff, contractors, and their families from evictions, foreclosures, repossessions, and other defaults during a shutdown. Scott Robinson worked for the Transportation Security Administration for 20 years and is now a labor advocate. Since some federal employees live paycheck to paycheck, he says ending the shutdown isn't automatically enough.
Even if funding were restored tomorrow, they would still need to wait the remainder of the pay period to be paid for the work they've done. Even after funding is restored, it will have continued effects on the officers.
As expected, the Federal Reserve cut interest rates by a quarter point. The stock market seemed disappointed, possibly seeking a bigger reduction, but economists say the Fed is balancing concerns about tariffs sparking inflation with slowing employment and uncertainty from the government shutdown. Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker is declaring an agricultural export crisis there due to Trump's tariffs. It comes as the president is proposing buying 80,000 metric tons of beef from Argentina as a short-term solution to bring down grocery store prices. Beef is an import commodity for Illinois, and Pritzker says the state will use every tool it can to support ranchers and farmers.
This order directs our state agencies to take immediate action, promoting domestic markets for agricultural commodities and expanding health resources for our rural communities.
I'm Edwin Javier.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, October 30th, 2025. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Josh Salem. The producer is Annette Newell, and our engineer is Otto. Our director of evening news is Althea Billings. Special thanks to Public News Service. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Annette Newell. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 443